everybody, and welcome to The Fertile Mind. This is Rich Geisler. I am the principal attorney at the Fertility and Surrogacy Legal Group. Again, The Fertile Mind is a podcast that we're hosting that's going to be giving you some basic information about surrogacy and egg donation and embryo donation and all things that are surrounding the field of fertility and surrogacy law. Today, I'm going to be talking about the gestational surrogacy in general. We're going to be describing generally what it is and what it means to folks and some definitions of some items for you, and just kind of set you on the right path if you're even just curious about it in general. Perhaps you're thinking about being a surrogate, or perhaps you're thinking about using a surrogate. So we're here to just give you some general information about that. First and foremost, what surrogacy is gestational surrogacy is what we deal with. It's different than traditional surrogacy in that gestational surrogacy is when a woman is carrying a fetus for you in which she is not genetically related to it. Because of that lack of genetic relation, the gestational surrogacy gives you more ability to get parental rights in an easier fashion than it would with traditional surrogacy. In many states, you'll see that compensated surrogacy is allowed. In some states, it's not. And in many countries, surrogacy in general is not allowed, let alone compensated surrogacy. So, for instance, in California, where we're based, we work in a number of states, but we do a lot of work in California. Compensated surrogacy is allowed. And basically what that means is that you will compensate a surrogate for her pain and suffering and inconvenience that she goes through in order to carry a child for you. And if you're a surrogate, you'll be compensated for doing that for a set of parents. That is different, again, than altruistic surrogacy, in that you may have a surrogate that can carry for you a child, and she's going to do it without any compensation. That would be family friend or just somebody that's going to do it altruistically without any sort of fees being paid or things of that nature. When I use the word surrogate throughout this episode, just also note that it's also called a carrier. So you have a gestational surrogate or gestational carrier. Many states' codes reference carrier or surrogate in sort of synonymously. So I'll probably be using surrogate more than carrier throughout. So gestational surrogacy and compensated surrogacy is different than adoption, in that an adoption process is something that you go through with a woman. You can do it prior to birth, and then at the birth, the rights to the child move to the adoptive parents. There is some concern with adoption that you can have there that you don't have with surrogacy, in that a woman giving up a child for adoption has an opportunity to change her mind. And with surrogacy, you don't have such an option. Once a surrogacy agreement is signed and agreed to and notarized, that's a requirement in some states and not others, then the surrogate at that point basically can't change your mind, and neither can you once you have a confirmed pregnancy. So generally, how does somebody find a surrogate? How does someone become a surrogate? A number of ways. So you have private party surrogacy. So that would be a friend of yours decides that she knows that you are going to need a surrogate and decides that she wants to help you out. She could decide that she wants to be paid to do that, or again, do it altruistically. Those friends are found obviously through friend networks or what have you. You also have folks that are not found just through friendship, but found through online. That's typically done these days. Facebook has groups. You can look around there. Perhaps other online social media sites and so on to reach out and find these connections to someone that's willing to care for you. When you're looking for somebody, obviously you can look across the country. If you're located in California, you may have a surrogate in Florida or Texas or what have you. That's okay. Just definitely talk to legal counsel as you move through this process, and I'll talk a little bit more about that just to make sure that you understand some of the trips along the way to avoid. Frequently, you have a lot of agencies out there. Now, surrogacy agencies are similar to adoption agencies in that they carry the water in terms of creating a database of whether it be surrogates or egg donors that they then match to parents. The parents come to them with a goal of finding a surrogate, and they go through their database and they have match meetings, and they then choose a surrogate, and the surrogate chooses them to sort of mutually agreeably work together to carry a baby for them. These agencies charge a fee to do that, and they're usually worth the fee because the agencies are doing a lot of coordination throughout the process, and that includes, again, the match, and it includes helping with setting up appointments for doctors at times, and it checking in with the surrogate throughout the process. And they're usually with you throughout the entire journey from match to delivery. Your attorney's typically with you along that as well. But agencies, most of them work with you throughout as well. Some considerations when finding a surrogate, whether it be private or through an agency, you definitely want them to go through both medical and psychological screening. Your agencies can help set that up, or your attorney can if it's private. You definitely want to make sure that medically she's cleared by an OBG or an IVF doctor to be a surrogate as approved. And psych screening is important as well. There's a lot of issues you want to just make sure that your surrogate understands before she agrees to be a surrogate. That's that she's going to be giving up a baby. Granted, she's not genetically related to the baby, but that still doesn't make it, you know, the easiest thing at times for surrogates to give up the child at the time of birth. There are requirements throughout the process for the surrogate to consider, restrictions on lifestyle, drinking, smoking, sexual conduct, travel. There are restrictions about, or there are prohibitions on terminations of pregnancies, as well as giving intended parents the ability to request terminations of pregnancy. So these are things that you want your surrogate to go through a psychological screening with somebody that specializes in this field, so that they can inform them of that and make sure that they're on the same page with you about that. Sometimes there's local regulations with what you need to choose for a surrogate, how old she is, if she's had babies previously. That's either regulatory, or you also just want to make sure from a private perspective that that she meets whatever requirements you may have in terms of age and things. When you're building a team for surrogacy, as I mentioned, you just kind of summarize, you have agencies that are involved, you have IVF doctors that are involved, you have psychological doctors that are involved, you have a legal team that's involved. You typically will have a trust manager involved when you're dealing with an agency. That's somebody that's going to hold your funds for you. This is required in some states when the agency is involved, but also just usually a good idea to have a trust involved that holds the funds to pay your surrogate throughout the process. Insurance is a key issue to consider as well, not only when you're choosing your surrogate, but choosing the location of your surrogate and choosing the team that's going to be helping you. When I mention insurance, I mention that for the purposes of what insurance does your surrogate have that's going to cover her pregnancy-related medical expenses throughout the process. That is an important factor for all parties involved, as the medical bills will be in the name of the surrogate, so she wants to make sure that there's coverage in place to help her with that. And for the intended parent, it's obviously very important, because the intended parent is the party that is going to be ultimately responsible for those pregnancy-related medical bills. So all parties want to make sure that they are understanding what insurance is in place, what it covers, what it doesn't cover. There's a lot of hoops to jump through and a lot of things to consider when choosing your insurance. There's also insurance for the baby. For international parents that have a child born here, that sometimes is a little bit of a different situation. I'm going to host a separate podcast episode dealing with just some international considerations for parents. But for our domestic clients and parents, you can typically get your baby covered by your insurance retroactive to the birth. So but definitely something to consider and talk to your company about, your insurance company. Also, with local domestic clients, it's another thing to consider is to look into the coverage that your company has, meaning your employer. A lot of employers these days are having different coverages for surrogates, meaning they'll help you with agency fees, or they'll help you with some sort of medical expenses or just some sort of stipend. So check your benefits packages and your employee handbooks to see if maybe your company offers you something like that to consider. So just general process of how a surrogacy occurs just from start to finish. You find your surrogate, as I discussed. They're matched with an IP, your intended parent. You then need to sign a gestational surrogacy agreement, which outlines the specifics of the details between the parties. These are the duties and obligations that each party has to each other throughout the process. Most states, you know, you cannot proceed forward with doing any sort of medications for the surrogate to start the process until a surrogacy agreement has been signed and notarized by both parties. Within that agreement, there's a number of things. I'm going to break down surrogacy agreement in more detail in a separate episode, but just know that that is something you'll have to do procedurally. Then you go through what we call a pre-birth order or a post-birth order, sometimes both. That is a process that you go to the court after the surrogate is considered pregnant and has a healthy pregnancy, and you go to the court and you get an order from the court that grants you the parental rights. The court uses that initially signed surrogacy agreement as its key to then issue that parentage order, and that parentage order is the proper document to grant you the parental rights. In some states, we get those pre-birth, so it sounds just like what it is, that it's an order prior to the birth. So immediately upon the birth, you're considered the parent. And in some states, you get a post-birth order as well, and that's an order that we get right after the pregnancy and delivery that names the baby specifically, has a specific birthday, and so on. From there, you have a birth certificate issued, and that would be issued in your name as the parent. And in some states, it's issued immediately in your name. And in other states, it's issued after the post-birth. They'll have a surrogate's name on it at first, and then they'll remove the surrogate's name immediately and then put your name on the birth certificate if you're the parent and destroy the first one with the surrogate's name on it. Birth certificates are issued by the Office of Vital Records. That's a state office in each state. And then you can typically pick them up or get them sent to you after the birth. There's also passports involved. I'm going to get into that a little bit more detail when I go over the international parent episode. So it's just some miscellaneous considerations as you're going through with this. If you're a surrogate, something to consider is, you know, the risks that you have. There's obviously medical risks, psychological risks, and emotional risks with being involved in a surrogacy. Again, that's why it's always good to have that psychological review and discussion, perhaps have someone to talk to throughout the process. There are frequently surrogate groups online that you can connect with, the support groups. There's also a risk to a surrogate's credit. As I mentioned earlier, the medical bills will be in her name ultimately. So that's why it's important that there be clear distinction on who will be paying those ultimately and the insurance that covers it. That does fall on the parents to pay those medical bills, but again, it's initially in the surrogate's name, so there is some risk she bears there. And from the parents, as I mentioned, again, back to health insurance, the location of the surrogate, whether there's travel involved, how far the surrogate needs to go to the hospital, whether you need to travel there, how far she is away from you. You want to consider the timing of the donations if you're getting an egg donation or you're donating sperm to create the embryos, how that ties into the cycle of the surrogate and how that will all line up. Your IVF physician can help you definitely maneuver through that process. So in conclusion, that's just a general 20,000 foot summary of gestational surrogacy in a nutshell. We'll be doing additional episodes to talk about different states in a little more detail, and as I mentioned, more international coming up as well. We appreciate your time. It's just me today, and again, we'll be coming up with some future episodes with some guests and so on, and I appreciate you taking time to listen to us. If you have any questions, please do not hesitate to ask. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.